Plot 87 occupies a barren corner of Milan's austere main cemetery. Here, the soil has been freshly turned to make new graves, 120 in all, the morning we visited. Another body was to be buried that afternoon. A simple white plastic cross marks each grave. Taped to each cross is a piece of paper bearing a surname, sometimes with an initial, sometimes with a first name. No date of birth. No date of death. Cemetery workers have placed a single plastic flower on each grave. Here lie those who have succumbed to coronavirus in Milan, but whose bodies have yet to be claimed. From CNN, May 21st, 2020. Welcome to the Politics of Pandemics, Episode 3, Sfortuna. It had only been 3 months from that article since COVID-19 was first detected domestically in Italy. And yet, since then, 228,000 Italians had been confirmed to be infected with COVID-19. Of those, 32,486 have died, which is a far higher mortality rate than most global averages. Images of flooded hospitals came out, first in the region of Lombardy in northern Italy, and then across other areas. Bodies began to literally pile up as crematoriums and cemeteries became overwhelmed. Many of the dead simply could not be claimed by their relatives due to COVID restrictions. Some would not be claimed at all. Italy became the first country in Europe to be truly overwhelmed by the pandemic. With footage of overwhelmed hospitals and images of tribute walls to the dead shown all across the globe. At one point, Italy was second only to the US in terms of the official death toll, though with only 15% of the USA's population. The region of Lombardy got the worst of it. It is where Milan is situated, becoming the epicenter of the pandemic in Italy. The province of Lodi within Lombardy was the first to lock down, and 2 weeks later, the whole country followed, beginning a lockdown that would last for a long 2 months, 1 week, and 2 days. It was a long, painful effort to mitigate the increasing number of cases and deaths. Some of this could be attributed to bad luck, or sfortuna, as the Italians would say. But Italy, and in particular Lombardy, also had many factors going against it. Several things that combined to create the perfect disaster in one of the most prosperous, populated, and oldest regions in southern Europe. Italy was not the first country to detect COVID-19 cases outside of China. They only found their first homegrown cases a month after Wuhan began their lockdown. That day was February 21st, 2020, when 16 people in Lombardy and Veneto were tested positive, though there is evidence that it had been spreading since January. Remember the names of those two regions. Italy had previously closed all flights from Wuhan by January 31st, and 3 people in Wuhan who had tested positive were isolated, but it may have been too late as they had been in the country for a week by then. The Guardian profiles a 64-year-old woman who visited a doctor in Milan after a 3-day flu on January 20th, one whole month before the first official case. The doctor, Irvin Musi, had started to see unusual pneumonia and flu in his community, especially in cases like the woman whose illness did not respond to treatment. She was hospitalized on February 14 and only tested for coronavirus on February 21st. She was one of the first in the country to be confirmed positive. At the time, Italy's health ministry recommended tests only for patients who had been to China or had been in contact with a suspected or confirmed positive case, which means there were a lot of suspected infections among sufferers of pneumonia that were never tested and thus not quarantined and treated properly. In the early days of the pandemic as well, a lot of doctors were not given adequate understanding of what they were dealing with. Quoting Dr. Maurizio Marvisi, a pneumologist at a private clinic, "After a phase of stabilization, many deteriorated quickly. This was clinical information we didn't have. There was practically nothing in the medical literature. There were more cases like this, suspected cases that were never tested or confirmed too late because testing on domestic cases was not as rigorous in the early days. But once the first test came back positive the next day, on February 22nd, the first lockdowns in Italy were imposed. These covered 11 municipalities, 10 in Lodi, which is in southern Lombardy, and one in neighboring Veneto, covering about 50,000 people. Across these two regions, sporting events were canceled, including a few Serie A football matches. The last 2 days of the Carnival of Venice were canceled, and many of Italy's famous tourist sites, like the Milan Cathedral and the St. Mark's Basilica, were closed to visitors. The filming of Mission Impossible 7 in Venice was suspended. Police were on the streets restricting freedom of movement in an attempt to prevent the coronavirus from spreading beyond the affected municipalities. And at the time, the measures were expected to end by March 6. But cases continued to climb, and social events were canceled, including in other parts of Italy. Worse, COVID-19 began to appear outside of northern Italy, despite some requirements for anyone coming from the north to be home quarantined. As Italy hit 100 confirmed deaths on March 4th, all schools and universities nationwide were closed. All sporting events would be played behind closed doors, leaving stadiums empty while matches played on. Day by day, new measures were implemented as cases grew exponentially. And on the last day of February, 240 new cases were announced in Italy. On the 4th of March, 587 were confirmed positive that day. On the 7th, 1,247 positive coronavirus cases were logged in 24 hours. Early on March 8, Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte announced the quarantine measures in Lodi would be expanded to include much of northern Italy. 16 million people would have their ability to travel around restricted, shop hours shortened, businesses ordered to have their employees work from home if possible, and social events and areas like gyms and pools closed. Leaves from medical staff were also canceled to deal with the increasing number of COVID-19 cases. At the time, the quarantine measures were the most extreme outside of China, and would immediately ground the wealthy region of northern Italy to a halt. But if the rest of Italy thought they would be safe, the quarantine measures would be expanded to the rest of the country just 2 days later. On the 11th, only essential businesses were allowed to open. By the 22nd of March, with almost all but the most essential businesses shut down, even the use of vending machines were banned. By the end of March, Italy was registering over 5,000 cases a day, with around 900 dying as a result of COVID-19 on a daily basis at its peak. This death rate is still far higher than what many other countries have experienced since, and the sudden increase in cases and deaths very quickly overwhelmed hospitals and, worse, funeral homes. In a city called Bergamo in Lombardy, the army was deployed on March 19th to manage the increasing number of dead bodies, as local workers became overwhelmed and cemeteries filled up. This grim sight of army trucks hauling wooden coffins to hastily built new cemeteries will become more common as time went on. In Italy's overcrowded prisons, the lockdown measures ignited riots in multiple lockups. Due to a combination of anxiety over the conditions that they were in, and the suspension of certain privileges like family and conjugal visits. In one of the biggest riots, prisoners in Modena set mattresses on fire, 6 inmates died after they broke into the prison infirmary and overdosed on methadone, which is used to treat opioid dependence, said Donato Capece, Secretary General of the Penitentiary Police Union. One picture shows inmates on the roof of the San Vittore prison in Milan holding up a painted sheet reading Indulto, Italian for pardon. The chaos resulted in several escapees and in a few others, inmates essentially took over the prison. Overall, 14 inmates died while in custody during the riots. Like in Wuhan, Italy attempted to build a field hospital in a Milan convention center. The field hospital was to be built in less than 2 weeks and hold 200 beds. The project cost 21 million euros, which was funded with great fanfare by the Lombardy governor as a way to ease the burden on Milan's exploding hospitals. However, beds aren't everything. The National Civil Protection Agency opposed the plan, arguing it could never equip it with the ventilators or the personnel required in time. Instead, they recommended smaller field hospitals and reallocating patients elsewhere, measures that were initially ignored. And in the end, this expensive quagmire treated only a few dozen patients as the predictions of the national authorities came true, and the hospital remained wanting of necessary resources. The hospital also opened on the worst day of the first wave, and Lombardy had since seen the pressures on its ICUs eased, rendering the expensive project unnecessary. Lombardy, where the crisis began, had more seniors over 65 than any other region in Italy, and COVID-19 tore through nursing homes and the elderly. A regional decree was issued on March 30th that told nursing home directors not to hospitalize sick residents over 75 if they had other health problems. This decree, while an attempt to ease pressure on hospitals, essentially condemned the elderly to death in Lombardy. Many of the elderly that came down with COVID-19 died in their homes, decree or not, unable or unwilling to get to a hospital. There were some nursing homes that tried to mitigate the virus's destruction, sadly without much help from the government initially. A nursing home in Nombro, Bergamo province, tried to proactively bar visitors in an attempt to protect staff and residents. They were instead threatened with sanctions and loss of accreditation, according to Director Valerio Pollini. Pollini's predecessor as director, as well as the doctor, and 37 of the 87 residents were all dead by the end of March. None of the surviving residents, as of the writing of that interview in April, had been tested yet. Unfortunately, the story repeats itself all across Italy, and especially in Lombardy. The World Health Organization called it a massacre. In some cases, some nursing homes were found to be severely lacking in prevention measures, and the police had to be called in to enforce quarantine in some of the worst hit nursing homes. The largest care facility in Italy is the Pio Albergo Trevozio home in Milan, and it was placed under criminal investigation after staff reported that managers prevented them from wearing protective equipment and masks for fear of scaring the residents. The home denied all wrongdoing, but by mid-April, 143 residents in that facility had died. For many in Italy, going to the hospital was not even an option, and sufferers of COVID-19 were forced to recover at home or on their beds, especially the elderly and infirm. Italy only had 8.6 ICU beds per 100,000 people, half of the OECD average of 15.9, and far less than Germany's 33.9. So, many were simply left to die in their beds at home, or by the time a bed finally cleared up, it was too late. It wasn't just a number of beds. Primary care physicians were forced to sub for overwhelmed specialists. PPE was at extreme shortage. Testing for coronavirus was still far behind what was needed, but only those who showed strong symptoms tested for coronavirus. Italy had a decentralized public health policy that left each province managing their own medical network, and it also allowed private companies to compete with public health networks for resources. As a result, it made distributing crucial resources and personnel much more difficult. Tens of thousands of medical staff would themselves come down with COVID-19 during this first wave, and over 150 would die. Nowhere was this massacre more profound than in Lombardy itself, the first province to be hit by COVID-19. This northern province is the richest region in Italy, home to the historical city of Milan and a sixth of the population of Italy. Lombardy was also the oldest, with a higher proportion over 65 and thus the most nursing homes. By the time the first lockdown was lifted in Italy, Lombardy was responsible for more than half the deaths in that country, about 16,000, because of a lack of testing and confirmation even after the height of the crisis. These factors were some of the reasons why Lombardy was uniquely vulnerable to COVID-19, but there were other causes that made things worse. Milan is the biggest metropolitan area in Italy, and the region is home to various industries like steel and agriculture. Lombardy was responsible for a fifth of Italy's GDP, and governments were under a lot of pressure from businesses to keep things open. Even though parts of Lombardy were the first to be shut down, most businesses still ran, and non-essential businesses would remain open until days into the nationwide lockdown. Confindustria is Italy's main industrial lobbying group, and in the wake of the crisis, the group had been accused of exerting incredible pressure on governments to delay the shutdown. On the 28th of February, they launched a social media campaign in English, hashtag Bergamo is running. They also launched another hashtag for Lombardy as a whole, hashtag Yes We Work. The purpose of the social media blitz, and why it is in English, is to assure their partners domestically and internationally that everything was fine, that the increasing number of COVID cases was but a blip, and all the industries in Lombardy were unaffected. Part of that messaging was unfortunately a downplaying of the severity of COVID-19, which remained part of their message until it was too late. For this next reason, we will temporarily turn the spotlight onto the neighboring province of Veneto. This is the home of Venice, which needs no introduction, as well as 5 million people, which is half of Lombardy's population. It is also home to Padua, which is one of the first cities to be locked down alongside Lodi. From there, the fate of the two regions diverged. While Lombardy would lose 16,000 people to COVID-19 by the end of May, Veneto would lose just 1,900. There were some factors that both Lombardy and Veneto shared, like the timeline in which shops and other services were gradually shut down in late February and early March. There were, of course, factors which made Lombardy more vulnerable, like population density and the prevalence of elderly Italians in crowded care homes. But the reason Veneto managed to keep the disease under control better than Lombardy boiled down mostly to a more proactive approach in testing and containment. On a per capita basis, Veneto conducted twice the number of tests as Lombardy. Officials in Veneto also tested asymptomatic cases and close contacts of positive cases, a departure from federal advisories. There was a strong emphasis on home diagnosis and care. Whenever possible, samples were collected directly from a patient's home, with universities contributing testing capacity. Specific efforts were made to monitor and protect healthcare and other essential workers, like caregivers and supermarket staff. That attention to limiting the spread of the virus amongst the people who are most likely to have it, even if they had not displayed symptoms, was key to keeping the crisis under control in Veneto. Unfortunately, this lesson was not heeded by the Italian government, and Lombardy was mostly following the more conservative federal guidelines. As a result, it seemed that Lombardy officials were always one step behind, playing catch-up in the name of keeping the economic engine running, until COVID-19 broke even that. Lombardy was overwhelmed, especially the areas that only went into lockdown, as the rest of the country did. The region's healthcare network, once the pride and joy of the region, struggled to manage the increasing numbers of dying and dead. The number of official cases hit its peak on the 29th of March on 2020, with over 5,000 cases a day and 900 deaths. However, the lockdown seemed to be working, as the number of cases began to slow after that. Slowly and painfully, the number of daily cases, as well as the number of deaths, fell from 5,000 to 4,000 to 2,000, and finally on May 10th, the number of confirmed cases fell below 1,000 daily for the first time. May also saw what was the beginning of the easing of restrictions from the long lockdown. Travel restrictions loosened slightly in early May, as well as allowing a few industries to return. May 18 was when most businesses would open, though some, like gyms and cinemas, would not return until a few weeks after. Intra-region travel was restricted until June 3rd, marking the end of the national lockdown after 12 weeks, while Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said that Italians, quote, deserve to smile, to be cheerful, after weeks of great sacrifice. More than 33,600 Italians had died as a result of COVID-19 by then. At the time, only the US and the UK had more confirmed deaths. This statistic is all the more shocking considering the number of confirmed cases at that point stood at almost 234,000. This number was almost certainly a fraction of the true number of cases in Italy. While very high, it still meant Italy had one of the highest mortality rates in the world as a result of COVID-19, and the utter loss and trauma of not being able to see out their loved ones as they gasped their last alone left an indelible mark on the national psyche. Unfortunately, Italy and the rest of Europe would again experience a new wave of cases beginning in July. The number of cases for the second wave would far exceed the first wave, but thanks to some of the lessons learned during the first wave, the mortality rate was not as high. This is not to say the crisis is far from over. As of October 2nd, 2021, an estimated 1 in 15 Italians have had COVID-19 officially. Over 128,000 have been killed by the disease and its associated comorbidities, 4 times what it was on June 3rd, 2020. But the vaccination campaign is currently ongoing in Italy, and much like the rest of the world, Italians are hoping that this will prevent a repeat of the horror the experience over a year ago when the army hauled the coffins of their loved ones to be buried in crowded cemeteries. Sources for this episode can be found in the episode description. I will set up an email in central location for correspondence and corrections soon. If I can make this podcast work, I'd like to hear from you, your story of dealing with this pandemic, and if you have any suggestions for future topics you'd like me to look into. I apologize once again for any mistakes I have made in the preceding episode, as well as the pronunciation of some of the Italian places and terms in this episode. And as always, if you can, get yourself and everyone you know vaccinated, wear a mask if you can, and always wash your hands.